I beat my father at chess for the first time when I was 12, and at first I thought it meant that I was brilliant. I danced around the kitchen, skidding in my socks, taunting him with his fallen king, and it seemed unlike him not to laugh. My mother poked her head in to see what the yelling was about, and I said gleefully, "I beat Dad at chess." My mother looked at my father, who was poring over the chessboard, his cheeks sucked in, his eyebrows clenched. "Did you let her win, Frank?" "Did you, Dad?" I said, insulted. I sat down at the table and fiddled with the knights. They were my favorite, because they were best for sneak attacks. "You didn't, did you?" "No," my father said, packing up the pawns, settling them in their foam for what turned out to be forever. "No, I would never do something like that." But how many of us would want somebody posthumously sifting through our past, looking for the first misstep? In retrospect, anybody's eccentricities, charms, and mistakes can take on a darker dimension and become foreshadowing. All we can know is that my father's mind was gone, by anyone's standards, by the time he was 40. So I do not think my projections for myself are overly pessimistic. If you're interested in stories about what can be done in a short lifetime, the history of chess is not a bad place to look. It's populated almost entirely by people who are at their best when they were barely out of adolescence. There's Bobby Fischer, of course, though that story ends badly, with lunacy, exile in Iceland, and anti-Semitism, and Alexander Alexandrovich Aliekhine, though that story ends badly, too, with alcoholism, erratic behavior, and more anti-Semitism. Then, there's Alexander Kimovich Bezetov, who was the USSR chess champion by the time he was 19, and the world chess champion by the time he was 22. His is a sad story, too, in some ways, although I didn't know that when I ran away to Russia to find him. Before Huntington's caught up with my father, he was as captivated by the Soviet Union as he was by chess. I grew up during the gasping tail end of the Cold War, and armchair speculating on geopolitics was something of a national pastime. For my father, though, it seemed to hold a particular meaning. It was his evening hobby after coming home from his days of teaching music to college students. He'd puzzle about the ironies of a regime that censored the fact of censorship. He'd spend dinner parties debating whether Brezhnev's Soviet Union was totalitarian or merely authoritarian. One day, when I was about 7, I caught him on the floor of his study, poring over photographs of Soviet parade order. "What are you doing?" I said. It wasn't unusual to find him doing odd things. My father had a healthy disregard for social conventions. He once let me paint the house windows in rainbows with my watercolor set, to my mother's horror, and he'd clap for trees that he thought were doing a good job of exploding into red during the fall. When I couldn't sleep, he'd let me sit up and watch Johnny Carson and drink ginger ale. When I spilled purple ink on the brand new white sofa, he helped me turn the pillows over so my mother wouldn't find out. One time, he took me out to watch a meteor shower at midnight on a school night, and I remember the chill of the wind and the subversion of learning that the universe still existed at night when you couldn't see it or weren't supposed to. "Trying to figure out who's really in charge over there," he said. "Who do you think?" I looked. In the photographs were grim men, their faces framed by mustaches and furry hats. None of it looked like a parade, in my understanding of the word. I pointed at one of the men with my toe. "Ah," my father said, "Chebrikov. A very educated guess. You should go into government." "I'm going to be a marine biologist," I said. even though it turned out I wouldn't be. "Very well," my father said solemnly. "If you must, you must." "But do you know how else they try to find out who's in charge?" "No, how?" "They look at the portrait order on the walls." "Like the most important portrait would be on top?"
"Exactly right."
"That's weird."
"Exactly right again, Irina."
I don't know what all that was about for him. He was a pianist and a professor of music, and during the life in which I briefly knew him, he was happiest at his piano, composing his songs, or sitting at a table, playing a game. It was a good life, as far as I could tell. But perhaps it was not the only one he might have wanted.